You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Greg Neese, PhD, an interculturalist coach and consultant. He earned his BA in psychology from UCLA, worked and traveled in West Africa, then took up residence in Europe. He is the author of the new book, Connecting Hearts and Minds. Dr. Neese, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Pleasure to be with you, Eric.
And you're most welcome. So for starters, whether it's a GM or a small business, those in charge need confidence. What does your book offer to those looking to become better leaders?
I think it depends exactly on what we mean with the word confidence. Obviously, when we think of confidence, we think of a sort of enthusiasm, a sort of belief in ourselves, an ability to handle a situation. And that's obviously a huge component of confidence, and if you don't have that, then you're lost. But if that's all you have, that's not going to make you a good leader either. I think we've all seen people who are big believers in themselves, have a lot of enthusiasm, but they don't have the competence that they need, and not having that second part of confidence is a major downfall for a lot of people who try to move into leadership positions. And I think what Connecting Hearts and Minds offers is a look at global competence. And by that, I mean the ability to work and communicate with people from diverse communities, diverse cultures around the world, to be able to move into a strange situation and adapt ourselves in a way that is mutually satisfying. So satisfying for ourselves and satisfying for others. One of the things that I deal with at length in Connecting Hearts and Minds is some universal dilemmas that face people and cultures around the globe. And one of these is the dilemma of power. And basically, you can think about that in the sense that on the one hand, we're all individuals. We all have our own feelings and thoughts. We all want our values to be respected. We all want to be treated with dignity. And so that sort of argues for a more egalitarian approach to using power and leadership. And you see this approach very clearly in the Scandinavian countries, Norway and Sweden. So that if you're dealing with a business there, you go into a business meeting and you look at how leaders interact with their employees in Norway or in Sweden, say, you see a very egalitarian approach. You see the way that employees will question their leaders, they feel entitled to ask questions that for other cultures can be very embarrassing because it seems to put the leader on the spot. It seems to call the leader's credibility perhaps into question. And so that's the one aspect of this dilemma of power, the kind of egalitarian side. On the other side, you see that when we have groups of people working and living together, trying to make decisions, if you just want to take an egalitarian approach and a very democratic approach, that works maybe in a very small group, but the larger the organization becomes, the more you see that working just with an egalitarian approach isn't very effective. And so you start seeing hierarchies developing. You see more top-down decision-making. And people who grew up in cultures that have more respect for this hierarchical approach to power have very different expectations of what a leader is, what good leadership is made of, how a leader should interact with his followers or her followers. And, you see this approach in a lot of countries in the world. I'm thinking right now of India and Bangalore, for instance, where I worked with a team. There, the employees had a very different way of dealing with the manager. The manager was actually expected to do things that a lot of Americans would consider micromanaging, but that's what the Indian employees wanted. So if you have an American manager who's put in a position of leadership on a global project team, he or she needs to know, what are the expectations of the people on my team? What kind of cultural background are they coming from? What kind of expectations do they have about a leader? How should a leader communicate with them? And this plays out in a lot of very mundane ways that take on a lot of significance when there's misunderstandings due to cultural background. So I think as a person moving into a position of leadership in a global situation is aware of these different expectations, aware of how these different perceptions are built, and these different worldviews about what leaders are, what leadership is, how one should communicate, this awareness contributes greatly to this global competence that will then allow him or her to become a better leader.
Most helpful information in many regards. Now, international business is changing all the time, politically and culturally. What are some key pieces of advice you have for those who are starting to work overseas?
I think for someone who is just starting out, the first thing that I would advise is to take some time to reflect on exactly what a culture is and how cultures influence us. We are often so focused on our personal goals that we become a little bit myopic to how the cultures that we grew up in actually influenced our personalities, actually influenced the way we see the world. And so we're kind of blind to the way that these cultures influence us, and we don't have a real awareness and a knowledge of how other people see the world, how other people, the expectations that other people have of, you know, working with someone in a work situation. And so what we would consider maybe professional in the United States might look very different to someone from Japan or from Singapore or Swaziland. So just taking that step back and giving themselves a little bit of time to reflect on what is culture, how does it affect me, and what are some of the different ways that people perceive the world, I think is a good first step. There's a lot of information out there, that books about various cultures and books about culture in general, which is what my book is all about. I think the second piece I would offer, and this is what I think Connecting Hearts and Minds brings to the table that's kind of new, is to start thinking more in terms of mindsight. By mindsight, I mean a kind of paradoxical ability to not only see into ourselves and understand how our own minds work, but then to empathize with and understand the workings of another person. And as I said, mindsight is paradoxical because we can only understand other people to the degree that we understand ourselves. This is sometimes hard for people to grasp at first, but maybe you remember when we were kids, someone would insult us. We would say things like, it takes one to know one. And in that little child's saying, that child's defense, is some profound wisdom about the nature of the mind. And the more we start understanding how our minds work, and we are living at an exciting time because there is so much brain research, so much neuroscience coming out to show us how our brains and minds work, that it's a huge opportunity for us. And so I've taken a lot of effort in my book to look at MindSight and how MindSight can help us understand ourselves and other people better. And I think that that is the second piece of advice that I would give to anyone who is just starting out. Because you start understanding that self-awareness becomes a huge component of global competence. And people don't usually see that at first. It's not intuitively obvious. But when you become more aware of how self-awareness really helps you understand other people, your relationships, your communication just starts automatically getting better. It's a surprising effect. You don't necessarily know why it's happening, but you just start having better conversations. You start having more productive meetings. You start having more effective interactions with other people because you've become a little bit more aware of what's going on in them on some intuitive level because you've understood yourself. I hope that doesn't sound too paradoxical. It is kind of a strange phenomena, but you know, we human beings are mirrors for one another. And when you think about how we grew up in our families and in our cultures of origin, we served as mirrors for each other. When we were babies, we learned everything by watching those around us. We incorporated our language, we incorporated the way people moved, and so much of this knowledge is unconscious. And so developing the MindSight allows us to tap into that unconscious awareness and knowledge, and as a result, we can develop a lot of our personal potential, which I think for any business leader, that's a, you know, just a given that's very valuable.
No doubt. Now, you specialize in diversity among different cultures, but what are some steps to managing diversity within your own organization?
You know, I think I would say almost the same thing. I would go back to the MindSight piece again. When we're working with different cultures, you know, when you work with someone from a very different culture, you're continually being confronted with the differences, and it's so very obvious. So it forces you to become aware of them and to start dealing with them. When you're in your own culture, because there's more similarity, we often fall prey to what I would call the trap of similarity. And so we sort of see these superficial similarities, and we don't notice the differences that really underlie those surface similarities. And MindSight, the ability to not only look into our own minds and figure out why are we doing this? Why am I interacting with this person this way? Why am I reacting in this way? Why is my emotions being triggered at this moment in such a way? We start realizing that that's exactly the same thing that's happening even in our own organizations with people who are very similar to us. The more MindSight we develop, the more we start realizing how much of our own behavior is being generated on kind of an autopilot mode. And we start seeing that a lot of, we start seeing that other people are doing the same thing. And so developing this MindSight allows us to have more understanding of the fact that in a certain sense, we're all living in our own individual psychological reality. We've all got our own little reality show going on, and we think that our reality show is somehow the reality, and oftentimes it's not. And when we start having that ability to step back and say, hey, what does the world look like to this other person? How is she or he feeling about this? How are, you know, what are they trying to do? We start developing more rapport. We start developing more tolerance for people who have a different opinion. And when you look at cultural organizations or organizations and their culture, you start realizing that people are doing the same things there that they're doing when they're dealing with people from other cultures. They're hanging out with people that are similar to them. They're seeking sources of information and facts that agree with their worldviews or their little reality. And they're avoiding people who have different opinions. We see that in the United States these days with the polarization that's going on. So I think the same skills that make us globally competent can also make us very skillful in dealing with people in organizations who may seem to be similar, but maybe under the surface line, under the waterline, are not quite as similar as they seem.
Today we are joined by Dr. Greg Neese, PhD, and the author of the new book, Connecting Hearts and Minds, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Don't forget, you can follow the show on Twitter at ePodcast Network, and we're also streaming on demand 24/7 on TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. Now, given the political environment here in the U.S., how has that affected the way businesses operate with each other around the globe, or has it had any effect at all?
Well, that's a very big question, obviously very complicated. And I don't know that we have any real hard evidence or studies at this point. They're probably being generated right now in academia as we speak. But it seems to me that there are two opposing forces or tendencies at work. On the one, you see the globalization force, which is pushing us towards a more global economy. This is being supported by all our communication technology, by social media, by our ability to have rapid transit around the world. So there's this force that's bringing more and more of us into contact with each other, and the economy is becoming more and more interdependent, more global. And a lot of people see that and they say, hey, that's really great. And a lot of business leaders obviously see that and say, this is something that, you know, we need to deal with. It's happening. And so how do we get an opportunity from this? How do we exploit the opportunity that this provides? And there is a huge opportunity there, obviously, for generating wealth and value and innovation and all sorts of good things. And so it's very easy to see only that side of globalization. At the same time, there is another force that's going on, and it looks at that globalization as threatening to local cultures, to local ways of life. And so you see kind of a reaction against globalization and an increased nationalism or nativism, and people trying to defend their local culture, their local way of life, the things that are very valuable to them and very enriching. And you see this in the election, I think, of Donald Trump. A lot of people voted for Trump because he promised to protect the American way of life. You see this in Britain with Brexit, with the folks there who wanted to pull out of the European Union, which was obviously a huge force for globalization. And they're pulling back and saying, no, we want to take care of Britain. You know, the UK is our primary concern and interest. And you see it in the elections that are going on right now in France with Marie Le Pen, who's obviously taking a very nationalistic approach to globalization, and she's seeing the downside and the danger. And I think that for a business leader who's trying to negotiate through this very complex social, cultural environment, political environment, I think a good leader, a good business person needs to realize that there's pros and cons to both sides, and globalization is not all good and glorious. And at the same time, it is bringing huge, huge opportunities for many, many people, bringing more wealth, bringing more innovation to their lives, more things of value to a lot of people. So it's a double-edged sword. And when you see that, then you can start making sense of the political terrain. So, for instance, if we look at Brexit, that vote was very close, and not all Britons were in favor of it, obviously. It came right down to the wire. So there's a lot of dynamics happening in Britain right there. And then you see things like, well, the Scots saying, well, okay, if you're going to pull out of the EU, then maybe we're going to pull out of the United Kingdom because we want to be in the EU. And you see some really vast, complicated situations. But I think in essence, it's that nationalism and localism have their place, and we need to find a way to create a global culture that will also recognize and respect the local cultures. And for a business person who's, you know, trying to negotiate this, this often comes down to the headquarters periphery dynamic, that so many decisions are made at headquarters and they ignore the periphery, and things on the periphery look very different from headquarters. So you see that same kind of double-edged dynamic in the situation facing these larger organizations, or even smaller organizations for that matter, who are dealing with people from around the world who see the world very differently. And I think the answer for it is dialogue and, you know, finding some time and some space for us to sit down and talk about these things and hear the different points of view and create more shared meaning.
Really interesting information shared. A lot of things going on globally, and you've touched on a lot of those, especially politically, not only in the U.S., but in the U.K. and also in France as well. In conclusion, what advice can you give to those who need to improve their overall communication skills, especially when they are dealing with people from other backgrounds, cultures, or who have vastly different viewpoints?
I think in the course of developing the mindset that we need to be globally competent, one mantra has become central for me, and that is safety first, truth second. And safety first is so important because one of the things that we realize as we start discovering who we are, how our brains work, why we react the way we do, how emotional we can become, is we start realizing that we all react to danger in a particular way. We all are susceptible to having our stress response triggered. We're susceptible to kind of a fight or flight reaction. And so what we don't always notice is that the threats, the things that we see as threats, as potential dangers, are very subjective. And so something that might seem very innocuous to me might seem terribly frightening to another person. You just think of public speaking. Some people love to get up on stage and speak publicly. They're great. They're charismatic. You know, we love listening to them, watching them, because they're so good. And then other people, you tell them, hey, you have to get up on stage and speak to an audience of 500 people. They turn very pale and white, and you know, they just want to crawl back under the covers because that's the worst thing they can imagine. And so we become more and more aware, as our mindset grows, we become more and more aware of how subjective threat and danger is. And so when we can create the safety that allows people to really show up, to really be present, to really speak from their heart of hearts, so to speak, then we can start creating these conversations that help organizations grow, that help us have better business meetings, that help us, you know, whether it's the boardroom or the bedroom, if there's no safety, we are not going to have the experiences that we all want. And so the safety first is huge. But the second part is truth second. Just having safety, you know, can lead to a very kind of comfy, cozy collusion, and we don't really move beyond groupthink. We don't really move beyond the status quo. We don't move to where we really want to be. To really get there, we start needing to bring out truth. And truth can be also very threatening to people. When people start speaking their truth, a lot of times we see other people getting very defensive, closing down, and the conversation ends. And so it's a matter of learning how to create safety for people and then slowly bringing in that truth so that we can have more shared meaning and better conversations. And my experience has been working with people from lots of different places around the globe. When we can create that shared meaning, when we can start creating larger identities, we start feeling like we belong to something bigger than ourselves, whether it's our organization or a bigger community or a bigger sense of, you know, the world. When we feel like we're part of something bigger than ourselves and we like that, then it allows us to unleash our aspirations and to dream bigger dreams and then to go for those dreams and to realize them. And I think that's the essence of, you know, what humanity has been trying to do since we showed up here on the planet. I think that's the essence of what communication is. And when we have those really transformational conversations, we walk away energized, we walk away inspired, we walk away just feeling great. And we all love those conversations. And so it's really a question of how do we have those conversations with one another? And I think really the essence is safety first, truth second, and developing the skills that allow us to do that.
Well, Dr. Neese, it certainly has been a pleasure to have had you. Quite informative, and a topic that really has been great to touch on here today. And we can't thank you enough for all the information shared here today. I'm sure our listeners want to know where they can get more information and how they could be in touch and how they also could pick up the book, Connecting Hearts and Minds.
The book they can most easily find probably at Amazon or any of the online dealers. It's Connecting Hearts and Minds, Insights, Skills, and Best Practices for Dealing with Difference. And in terms of contacting me, they could go to my website, www.gregnees.com, or shoot me an email at greg@talkingtogether.com.
Well, that's easy enough. Well, Dr. Neese, again, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Continued success, and you have a great day.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you.
It certainly has, and I really enjoyed it. We have been speaking with Dr. Greg Neese, PhD, and the author of the new book, Connecting Hearts and Minds. And for more information, visit gregneese.com or talkingtogether.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Pick up our iPhone or Android mobile app for your exclusive mobile listening convenience. And once again, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.